I'm Catholic, a mammy's boy, and a mostly functioning alcoholic. My grandfather... Actually, he's not technically my granddad. Father Doherty's a Catholic priest. But Mam's Da died young, and Father Doherty, his brother, kind of took care of her like she was his own. Anyway, he taught me how to make stew, which, to this day, is the only food I know how to prepare. I live on a farm, with a staggering amount of sheep, all of them arseholes. I prefer stout to lager, missionary position over doggy. I think George Best was a god, and reckon brown sauce can cure anything short of cancer, including, but not limited, to hangovers, a badly cooked meal, and possibly hepatitis C.
We're incredibly stereotypical representations of the places we come from. I roll my nose hoop, moving it around inside its hole. I do that when I'm nervous. Keeps my hands busy.
Stereotypes exist because they have a seed of truth.
He stops, turns around, and wraps the roof of an old Ford the color of bad teeth.
Now come. We have places to go, things to see. And I'm afraid you must do the driving.
Huh?
Have you not seen any decent romance movies, Princess Aurora from New Jersey? All the best meet-cutes in cinematic history involve the woman driving the man somewhere. When Harry Met Sally, Singing in the Rain, Thelma and Louise.
The last one wasn't a meet-cute, and Gina Davis is not a man. I can't help but laugh. How dare he thaw me before I'm ready to defrost?
Tomato, tomato.
He throws a set of keys into my hands and I catch them on instinct.
Your carriage awaits, Madam Semantics.
This guy is sleek, charming, the worst type of heartbreaker, not compassionate enough to let you know he's an asshole by actually behaving like one. I bet he leaves a string of half-beating, bleeding, broken hearts in his wake wherever he goes, like Hansel and Gretel left breadcrumbs to find their way home by following the trail. Only I know where this path is leading. Destruction. Wait. Before we go anywhere, I have something I want to ask you. I raise a hand. Best to set the expectations right now.
All right.
He throws the passenger door open, sliding inside. I'm still standing on the pavement when he shuts the door, rolls his window down, and rests his arm on its frame, sliding his aviator sunglasses on.
You coming?
Aren't you going to ask what it is before you let me in? I frown. He raises his aviators and flashes me a smile that can hold up the entire universe with its magnitude.
What's the point? I'll give it to you anyway. Be it money, a snog, a shag, a kidney, a liver. God, I hope it's not my liver you're after. Unfortunately, mine has seen some mileage. Come on now, Aurora.
Rory.
Rory,
he amends, dragging his straight teeth over his bottom lip.
Much more fitting. You don't look like a princess at all.
I arch an eyebrow. I don't know why his statement annoys me. He's right. I look nothing like the princess my mother wanted me to be. My best friend, Summer, says I look like a suicidal pixie.
You look like the more beautiful stepsister in a Disney movie. The underdog who gets the prince at the end. The one who wasn't born with the title, but earned it,
he explains. I can feel myself turning red, thinking that ironic, as I just found out I do have a half-sister.
Oh, she is blushing.
He raises a fist in the air through the window.
All is not lost. I still have a chance.
Actually, you don't. I douse his enthusiasm in cold water. It makes him laugh harder because he already knows. The bastard knows he is winning me over. I won't have a one-night stand with you, I say.
Of course you won't,
he agrees easily, freely, not believing a word. I mean it, I warn, over my dead body. Laughing harder, he taps the passenger door.
Chop chop now, princess.
Mal directs me out of Dublin in his own peculiar way.
Take a left. No, your other left. Never mind, the original left.
And though I'm terrified driving on the other side of the road, and despite the fact I don't have an international driver's license, I still find myself behind the wheel. Maybe it's the setting that unchains me from any type of reasonable logic. Maybe it's Mal himself. All I know is I'm 18, newly orphaned by a dad I didn't know, and I feel like I'm suspended in the air like a marionette between sky and earth. Nothing to lose, nothing to gain. We roll into a small village tucked between green hills a stone's throw from Dublin, with a white wooden sign announcing our arrival in Tolka, County Wicklow. There's a river to our right, an old stone arch bridge over it, and old houses with bright red doors edging the town's entrance. It's more like a main street, with a few houses scattered around it, like spots of hair on an otherwise bald head. We drive down Main Street, passing a bright blue house, a church, a row of inns, pubs, and a little cinema Mal tells me offers actual individual seats, and the people operating it still use traditional reels. The road winds, snaking up and down, and my heart feels strangely full when I park the car, as instructed by Mal, a few buildings down from a pub called The Boar's Head. When we exit the car, I stop and take my camera out. The pub is painted stark white, with green windows decorated by flower pots with marigolds and cornflowers spilling out of them. The Irish flag hangs on a pole by the door. It looks like something out of folklore, a tale my late father would have told me in another life.
What's keeping you, Rory?
Mal turns around mid-stride into the pub and catches me crouching down on one knee, squinting and aiming the camera at him.
Make love to the camera, gorgeous,
I say in a creepy old man voice, expecting him to tell me to quit it. Instead, Mal breaks into a huge grin, covers an imaginary blowing-in-the-air dress, and sends a kiss to the camera, a la Marilyn Monroe. Only his dripping masculinity makes it look 100% hilarious and 0% feminine. Click, click, click. I stand up and walk over to him. He offers me his arm. I take it, too tired to resist. Is this where you live? I motion around us. In this village?
Just under that hill.
He runs his fingers through my hair to pull it out of my face, and my spine tingles in unexpected delight. He smiles because he notices.
With all the arsehole sheep I told you about earlier. You'll meet them in a bit.
I have a flight to catch tomorrow. I clear my traitorous throat, which keeps clogging with all sorts of emotion.
So?
I can't stay long. He stares at me with a mixture of confusion and mirth. I think this is possibly the first time he's been rejected. Then he does the unbelievable and reaches to run his thumb over my birthmark. Staring at it, mesmerized.
How'd it happen?
He asks, his voice so soft it sounds like it's fading. I feel so warm. I can practically sense the sun beating down on my skin, even though it's cold and gray out. It didn't. I was born with it.
You were, huh?
His thumb drags from my temple to my lips. Was he expecting some crazy story about a car crash or a freak accident? I pull away. Anyway, I can't stay. I have a hotel booked in Dublin.
I'll drive you back to check out.
He snaps out of his weird trance.
You'll be staying with me tonight.
I'm not going to sleep with you, over my dead body, remember? He cups my cheeks in his hands. They're rough and confident. An artist's hands, and my heart thunders with newly found pity for my mom. Now I get why she slept with my dad. Not all Casanovas are slimy. Mal isn't.
Don't let your feelings get in the way of facts.
Meaning, I frown.
Just because you don't like the fact that you're going to sleep with me doesn't mean it's not going to happen.
He brushes his thumb over my lips.
And just because we've only met doesn't mean we're strangers. Do we feel like strangers?
He asks, jerking me to his body. No. No, we don't. He feels like he's never left my side. Like I carried a tiny part of him with me from the moment I was born. And now that he's here, we can fit the part I kept with the rest of him. Like finishing a puzzle. I gulp, but say nothing.
Exactly. Now you're cocking up our perfect meet-cute. Gina Davis is rolling in her grave.
Gina Davis is not dead, Mal.
Come, Madam Semantics. Let me feed you.
3 corned beefs and a shepherd's pie later, Mal points at me with his half-finished Guinness pint, his 4th. I'm still nursing my 1st vodka diet Coke.
You wanted to ask me something.
He squeezes one eye shut like he's zeroing in on me with a gun, licking the white foam of the Guinness from his upper lip. Here goes. I came to Drury Street on your granddad's advice. He knew I was Glenn O'Connell's daughter. He said you'd be able to tell me more about him. I study his face carefully. He takes my hand, flips it, and trails the lines on the inside with his finger. The little hairs on the back of my neck stand on end.
I used to go to Granddad's church every Sunday when I was a kid. Glenn lived behind it. He'd let me listen to his records. He taught me a few notes and helped me string a sentence together when I started writing songs. Taught me how to bleed onto a page. So yes, we knew each other quite well. Well enough for him to tell me he'd kill me if I ever touched his daughter.
Huh?
The other one.
He shakes his head, laughing when he sees the look on my face.
Not you. God, Glenn would have died on the spot had he met you in person. He would have appointed an army to protect your virtue.
From you?
And the rest of Europe.
He smirks. Is that his weird Mal way of telling me I'm pretty?
Why didn't Granddad send you to Kathleen, Glenn's daughter? She lives right down this street.
Mal frowns, finishing off his pint. Kathleen. My sister's name is Kathleen. The penny drops, and he realizes I didn't know her name.
You knew you had a sister, yeah?
I nod slowly. My mom refused to tell me her name. She said it shouldn't matter because no one here particularly wants to know me. How come this entire village attends a church in Dublin if you all live here? Kinda weird. I circled the straw inside my drink. Mal sits back.
Not the whole village, just us. Mam works weekend shifts at Lidl, so Kathleen's mam took us both to Sunday Mass to support my granddad's Dublin gig, essentially babysitting me. I usually went home with Granddad, but sometimes I stayed with Kathleen when she hung out with Glenn afterwards.
What kind of father was he to her?
A good one,
he says. Then frowns and amends.
But not good enough for you.
How old is Kathleen? I ignore his attempt to make me feel better.
My age?
Mal still studies my hand like it's the most interesting thing in the world.
22,
he adds. You must know her well.
We grew up together.
He clinks his empty glass on the sticky wooden table.
Why he would direct you to me and not to her, I wonder.
He said she was in a state and didn't want to see anyone.
Bollocks. Kathleen's more social than a penguin.
What an odd thing to say. I try not to smile at his choice of words. Everything about him is so different. What's she like? I feel like an FBI agent, but it's hard to keep myself in check when I want to learn everything there is to know about Dad, about my sister. Plus, if my lips keep moving, I don't have to stop to examine the stain of jealousy in my voice. Kathleen had years of growing up with Dad and being next to Mal.
Sweet. Nice. Saintly. You'll see. Let's go see her. She must have a load of photos of him.
I don't know if that's a good idea.
Well, I do. You're not getting out of here empty-handed. Let's go.
He takes my hand and yanks me to my feet. He slaps a few bills onto the table, and I don't even attempt to pay for my portion of the meal, because with the hotel, I'm already deep in the red on this trip. My hand clasped in his, Mal blazes through Main Street like a bullet. It starts to rain, and I duck my head, trying to dodge the downpour. He laughs, his voice muffled by the storm.
I can't believe it's raining in the summer. It's like you brought winter with you, Rory.
It is weird, but it keeps us close and touching, so I don't care. Why not take the car? I yell.
Her house is right in front of my car, actually. Besides, she'll have mercy on us if she sees us wet and miserable.
I thought you said she was saintly.
Even the godly have their limits, especially considering I've been ignoring her for 3 consecutive months.
He snorts. Mal! I shriek, but he only laughs harder. We arrive at a white-bricked, black-shuttered Victorian house. Mal raps the door and runs his fingers along his dripping hair. It sticks out in 1,000 different directions, making him look annoyingly delicious. A few seconds pass before the door swings open, and a girl who looks like a rounder, less edgy version of me appears. Her hair is ruby red, a few shades lighter than my original light orange, but she has the same big green eyes and bony nose and downturned pouty lips. She has freckles like me and the same beauty mark by her upper lip. But as far as appearance goes, this is where our similarities end. She's wearing a sensible white cardigan with a long blue A-line dress underneath. Her leggings are pristine white, like bones. I shift in my Toms and hoodie and jam my fists into my pockets to stop myself from playing with my nose hoop. Mal, she cries when she sees him, throwing her arms over his neck and burying her face in his shoulder. What are you doing here? God, you're soaking wet.
Kath, I want you to meet my friend, Aurora, from New Jersey.
He flashes her a big, goofy smile and motions to me as if I'm some kind of a prize in a game show. We're still on her doorstep, the rain pounding our faces. But even that doesn't stop Kathleen from taking a sharp inhale, her eyes bulging when she notices me for the first time. Mal is too busy kicking the rain off his boots and shaking his head like a dog to recognize the delicate situation he's just created.
You said you always wanted to meet her, and she told me she doesn't even have any pictures of Glenn. Well, bumped into her in Dublin and reckoned it was high time for a reunion. Thank me later.
He winks, knocking his shoulder against hers, his fists stuffed in his jacket pockets. So my mom was right about one thing. Men do have the emotional intelligence of underdeveloped bricks. I blink at her, refusing to dwell on the fact that Father Doherty insisted she didn't want to see anyone. Yet Mal says she's been dying to meet me. Only one of those things is true, and I have my hunch. Kathleen assesses me. Not that I can blame her. It is a bombshell. And I immediately feel guilty for going against Father Doherty's word. She shakes her head, snaps out of it, smiles, and flings her arms around me in a hug, throwing herself into the rain. I stagger back and return a squeeze. Oh God, oh God, oh God, she crushes my bones with her hug. I melt into her and burst into laughter and tears at the same time. It's a total case of emotional diarrhea, but it's not every day you meet your half-sister for the first time.
You're both drenched. Come, shall I make some tea?
She disconnects from me, tugs my hand, and ushers us inside, padding to the bathroom and coming back with two warm towels. We wrap ourselves gratefully.
Tea,
Mal exclaims like it's the best idea he's ever heard in his life.
The magic word. Rory, did you know Kath makes a mean cup of tea? Best in the county, no joke.
Kath swats Mal on the chest and giggles like a schoolgirl on our way to the kitchen. We follow a narrow hallway with coats and scarves piled on hangers. Everything is small and neat and cozy. The house has a 70s feeling to it, with green wallpaper, brown furnishings, and yellow lights. It is soaked with familiarity, fully inhabited, not just a space with furniture like Mom's house in New Jersey.
Country, not county, Mal amends.
Kathleen swats Mal's shoulder and keeps her hand on him possessively. Sighing like it's a job, he captures her wrist, turning her around and pinning her against the hallway wall in one swift movement. I halt, watching the situation unfold. He holds her like a farmer holds cattle, rough and without passion, but she is breathing hard. Her eyes, heavy-lidded and dripping lust, daring him to make another move. She lets out a little moan, flinching at her own lack of control and turning bright red. He looks down at her like she's a chewed toy. The familiar old type that is too nostalgic to throw away, but no one wants to play with anymore.
How's school, Kiki?
He asks with a pang of regret in his voice, like he hates to do that, string her along. Then why does he? He knows exactly what he's doing to her, and that bothers me because I can see just how much he oozes control. She is locked in the moment, but he's an observer, the gatekeeper keeping her in a foolish dream, the key far from her reach. Grand, her voice shakes. I tried to call you a few times. Dropped by on Sundays after Mass. Your ma'am said you've been busy.
I have.
Not too busy for Aurora, apparently. She turns scarlet again. There's nothing mean about her tone, just desperate. My loyalties are torn between the boy she loves who is trying to help me and the sister who's falling apart because of him.
She prefers the name Rory.
Mal removes a lock of hair from Kathleen's face, tucking it behind her ear. I want to punch him in the balls on her behalf, then kick him in the knee on mine. Sorry, Rory. She flashes me a nervous smile, snapping her eyes back to him like he could disappear at any moment. I missed you. She missed him. She loves him. I can't do this to her. I can't kiss him or sleep with him or do any of the things I want to do with Mal. Because I'm leaving, and she is staying. Because she seems lovely. And even if she isn't lovely, she's still my sister. I tiptoe my way to the kitchen without making it apparent that their seemingly friendly conversation is making something in my chest collapse brick by brick.
Stay,
Mal snaps behind my back. He doesn't sound so nice anymore. I halt, but don't turn. Kathleen's obviously got it hard for him, and I want to show her I'm not a threat. You guys are, I start.
Nothing,
Mal clarifies.
We're just friends, right, Kathleen?
She clears her throat, smoothing her dress. My heart is dust in the wind. Poor her. Of course. What an asshole. Before I know what's happening, Mal is at my side, plastering his hand at the small of my back. He ushers me into the kitchen, leaving Kathleen behind. I turn my head to her as I go, and she flashes me a tired smile, waving us to move along. I'll just go wash my face, she mumbles. Turn the heater off, maybe. I'm feeling a bit flustered. I take a seat at the dining table and study the family pictures hanging on the walls with hungry eyes. But there's no one who looks like he could be Glenn. Just Kathleen and her mom. Kathleen and the family dogs. Kathleen kissing young Mal's cheek while he looks horrified and disgusted to the core, as boys do at that age. Even toddler Mal gives me butterflies. What the hell is wrong with me? Everything, apparently. He's just like your dad. My half-sister serves us tea and shortbread as she tries to make conversation. She explains to me that she studies veterinary medicine and jokes about Mal hiring her when he eventually takes over his family farm. Actually, it was Mal who told me I should become a vet. Remember, Mal? The day I tried to save that pigeon. I think it was the Christmas we turned 11. Mal stares at me.
Yeah, sure.
He doesn't remember. Kathleen's eager smile doesn't collapse.
He's just being modest. You just wait till I graduate, Mal. You have plenty of sheep and cows. You can do so much with them if you only put your mind to it. Renting out the land to other farmers is a bad investment. I could help.
I'm a musician.
He pours half a carton of milk into his tea, staring intently at his cup.
I've no interest in farming.
You still help the boys here and there, though.
He shrugs.
When they need help, yeah. I also take shits. Doesn't necessarily mean I want to be a plumber.
I almost spray the tea in my mouth all over the table. Almost.
How are you a musician, Mal? You don't want to be a singer, and you don't sell your songs to anyone, even when they make you an offer.
Her eyelashes flutter, her cheeks staining pink. There's more back and forth on that front. Then Mal stops Kathleen's stream of questions and arguments and says,
We were wondering if you could share some memories of Glenn with Rory, since she never really met him. Surely you don't mind.
Oh, of course. I didn't want to point out the elephant in the room.
She smiles, angling toward me in her seat.
Of course, Rory. Anything. What would you like to know?
I tap my knee under the table. What was he like? Did he ever talk about me? Did he miss me? Did he care?
He was the best, Rory. We had a great relationship. He had a wicked sense of humor and a massive musical talent. In fact, the only guy I know who's more talented than him is Mal. Da used to call me McNugget because I was small and a bit pudgy when I was a kid. Remember that, Mal? I was so offended for the longest time.
She reaches and squeezes Mal's shoulder. He is still looking at me. Kathleen's words sound detached, but I chalk it up to her being upset over Mal showing up here with me.
Did he have a lot of freckles, like us?
I ask, the question sounding dumber than it was in my head. Thing is, I've never seen my dad, ever. My mom told me he had dark hair and light eyes and three chins. Forever a poet, this woman.
No, Kathleen chuckles. His face was pale and smooth. I got mine from Ma.
I guess I got mine from my mom, too. Do you have a picture of him? I fidget with my fingers under the table.
I don't believe I do, she scrunches her nose. Have you not seen him?
I shake my head, swallowing the ball of tears settling in my throat. Maybe it was a mistake to come here and see the real family he left behind.
Surely you have a picture or two of Glenn, Kiki.
Mal frowns at Kathleen. She bites her lip. I'm sorry. Mam did a massive cleanup a few weeks ago and moved everything to the attic. She's got the key for it, I suppose, but she's out. I wish I could have known you were coming, Rory. I'd have asked her to leave it here.
Did he ever mention me?
I ask into my cup of tea, not wanting to see the pity in her face when she answers. Even staring down, I can see Kathleen in my periphery, putting down her cup of tea and sighing heavily, almost theatrically. I don't know why I do this to myself. Each question puts another nail into my self-esteem's coffin. Oh, Rory, I really am so sorry. I lift the cup and bring it to my lips. The scorching liquid burns a path from my tongue down my throat, but I'm practically chugging it, longing to feel anything, even pain, to distract myself from what's going on inside my head. Mal eventually lowers my hand with the cup. I'm sure he did here and there. He'd have loved you, Kathleen tries desperately. Daw loved everyone, didn't he, Mal? Even that stook, Jared, who sold knockoff Burberry on the street corner every Sunday. Mal gives her a weird look I can't decipher, then stares at me in a way that makes me feel naked of clothes, skin, and bones, like he's looking into my soul, dissecting it with a knife and fork. He snaps out of it, stretching in his seat.
Excuse me, ladies, nature's calling, and it has a 3-gallon piss for me to depart in the jacks.
He stands up and saunters to the bathroom. I realize he knows this house by heart, been here probably dozens of times. He and Kath share history, chemistry. I should feel happy that Kathleen might end up with a guy like Mal, if she ever manages to tame him. Funny and charming and handsome. But for some reason, I don't. As soon as Mal is out of earshot, I shake my head and smile. He's a wild card, huh? Kathleen's sweet smile drops. She plucks a tube of lip gloss from her handbag on the table and squeezes a generous amount onto her pinched lips.
What he is and what he's not shouldn't matter to you. He's mine.
Her warm voice is now a cold, pointy blade running along my neck. Excuse me? I slant my head back. She smacks her lips, lifts her teacup, pinky in the air, and takes a slow sip.
The problem with Malachi is he has a weakness for strays. No matter how dirty, no matter how rabid,
she narrows her eyes at me.
No matter how dangerous.
I study the way her face twists in revulsion, my mouth parting in shock. Fake. It was all fake. My sister is not nice or timid or disoriented. She is the devil. She hates me. She's always hated me. That's why Father Doherty wanted me to stay away. That's why he directed me to his sweet grandson. Kath just puts on a mask for Mal. You know, Da said he'd made a terrible mistake when he came from Paris, and it became known he'd impregnated the American slag. But personally, I've always wanted to meet my wee half-sister. Until he died, and it became clear you'd go after his money. I didn't want to believe it. I truly didn't. I even wanted to write to you.
Yet you didn't.
I grit my teeth, holding her gaze now. How convenient of you to say you wanted to reach out but never did. I feel cold again. I want Mal to come back, to soak the room with his warmth. She flashes a mocking smile.
Fancy seeing you here a second after he drops dead.
My nostrils flare and my heart kicks up. Whatever she's insinuating is complete BS and far removed from the truth. I'm not here for his money, I hiss, narrowing my eyes and hoping to God I look as menacing as I feel. I'm here to see his grave, where he lived and grew up, to take some pictures so I can look back at them and tell myself I came here and connected to my roots. There's half of me I don't even know. I'm carrying a stranger's genes in my body for crying out loud.
Why not sooner, then?
She rolls her eyes on a sarcastic smile. I wasn't of legal age to make that decision.
Is that why your mam sent a letter to my grandparents asking to see the will? So you can connect not only with your heritage, but also a nice Gucci bag?
It's a surprise my jaw doesn't hit the floor. I want to kill Mom. Or at least I think I should. I don't know what I'm entitled to or not. I don't care. I'm not gonna use his stupid money. This is not what this trip is about. Listen, I start, but she cuts me off. She leans forward, clutching my hand in hers across the table. Kathleen squeezes painfully, crushing my bones, her plastic smile making an unexpected comeback. Now I know that when she hugged me at the door, she really did mean to hurt me. She looks like the kind of girl who'd drown her old dog to get her parents to buy her a puppy.
No, you listen to me. You're not going to see a penny from Da's money. He left everything to me, and for good reason. I'm his legitimate child. You and the other poor sod who kicked the bucket, on the other hand, are nothing but mere unfortunate accidents. Also, you can shag Mal all you want for however long you're here, but it is me who will marry him. So just remember that when you're writhing underneath him and letting him use you. He'll fuck you because he can, but it's me who will warm his bed forever. And that's you in a nutshell, Aurora. A cheap version of me. In Da's life, in Mal's.
Her grip tightens even more around my hand. I pull away, but she is strong, and I'm too stunned to move. Her lips twitch and widen.
And please don't embarrass yourself by trying to pull your mother's trick and get knocked up. Surely you know he won't follow you to America. And if you expect to dump your spawn at my door, you're in for a terrible disappointment.
I stare at her, wondering how I could be genetically linked to this cardigan-wearing, fire-spitting, green-eyed monster. You've got it all wrong. I try to yank my hand away again, but she tugs harder, digging her manicured, neutrally colored nails in. Usually, I'm a take-no-crap kind of person, but right now, the shock of being in a foreign land and hearing this from my only living relative besides Mom freezes me to the spot. Turns out I'm not a fight nor a flight type of person. I'm a let's sit here like a log and see how it pans out chick.
Stay away from Mal. He is mine. The money's mine. Everything you see here, everyone you meet belongs to me. Leave.
You think I'm after the money? Your crush? I spit the last word. Moments ago, I'd have died before laying a finger on Mal. But right now, I would likely hump him on her dining table, preferably as she eats her dinner in front of us.
I think you're a gold-digging whore like your mother. She ruined my father and everything I knew and loved. You're the reason I lost him for a while.
A while? What does she mean by that? Pointless to ask, as she seems less than cooperative with me. You're a bitch, I retort. Not the most eloquent of comebacks, but one that comes from the heart. She smiles.
Well, I'm the bitch who owns everything you want, so I'll happily take the title.
Now, don't look so riled up.
Mal loves me more than life itself. If you tell him I said any of those things, he'll kick you to the streets.
Mal reappears at the kitchen door with perfect timing, plopping back on his chair. He notices Kathleen's hand on mine. She pats the back of my hand in a motherly way and straightens her spine.
Bonding. I like it.
He looks between us, yawning.
What did I miss?
Nothing important, she purrs, blinking in my direction with a sugary, meaningful smirk. I just brought Rory up to speed. 3. 8 years ago. Rory.
Know what's ironic?
Mal asks when we exit Kathleen's house. I'm still shaken and nauseous from our visit. When I told Mal I'd had enough of our friendly chat, Kathleen altruistically volunteered to drive me back to Dublin. She really is a saint. Not. Mal, who has been blessed with the diplomacy skills of a soiled diaper, informed her that we were planning to spend the rest of the night together. It was the first, and I hope the last, time in my life that I took pleasure in someone else's misery. She could burn in hell at this point, and I wouldn't even hand her sunscreen. The sky is a blue and orange velvet blanket. The scent of fresh earth rises from the concrete and trees, enhanced by the rain. My head is still reeling from the hateful words Kathleen threw in my face like grenades. Gold digger, stray, whore.
Earth to Rory.
Mal grabs a lamppost and spins around it like in the movies, jumping into a puddle and splashing me.
What's eating you? Can't be me, or you'd have a smile on your face.
You're not funny, I snap, still walking. He catches my wrist and spins me to face him. We're in front of his car. I don't feel like driving, or talking, or breathing. I just want to go home, to America, with my tail between my legs, licking my wounds. I don't have a family in Jersey other than Mom, and I sure as hell don't have one here. At least I have Summer.
What's wrong? Did Kathleen say something to upset you?
Mal frowns, placing a hand on my shoulder. A little voice inside my head tells me to keep my mouth shut about Kathleen's Don Corleone speech. Not because I want the best for her, but because I want the best for Mal, and he doesn't deserve to know his childhood friend is a bitch. I have a 24-hour shelf life in Ireland. I'm merely a smear of ink in the elaborate painting called his life. Why disrupt their relationship, if he'd even believe me? Besides, I saw how he looked at her. There's no attraction there. Amusement, yes, but he'll never be with her. In a moment of sheer madness, I do something I've never done before. I slant my eyes toward her house, making sure she's at her window, watching us. She is. Kathleen is messing with the top button of her cardigan. Button, unbutton, button, unbutton. Her lips pressed together, her hawk-like eyes watching my every move. Slowly, I raise onto my toes. Everything is mine, nothing is yours. We'll see about that, sister dearest. I press my lips to Mal's, tentatively, shyly, uncertainly. I've never kissed a boy before. It was always the other way around. But I'm not here to enjoy the kiss. I'm here to prove a point. His mouth, warm and soft, latches on mine delicately. He wasn't expecting to be kissed, but he is molding into the shape of my body, so we're pushed against each other everywhere. Seconds pass. I watch Kathleen watching us kiss, my eyes wide open while Mal's are closed. I drink from the well of Kathleen's misery for long seconds before I sink down to the pavement, disconnecting from him. I peek behind his shoulder again. She is red, her lips so thin they're non-existent.
No,
I hear Mal grunt. I look up at his face, and something about it sucks the air out of my lungs like a vacuum. A black cloud passed over his features while I gave him that kiss. No part of him is playful or cute anymore. He looks like a demon, out for blood, thick eyebrows pulled together, eyes crackling with thunder, mouth twisted and sharp like an icy storm. No, I whisper.
No, this is not a fecking kiss, and this is certainly not our first kiss.
Before I know what's happening, he pulls me at the waist and slams my back against his car. I arch and moan when his hands find my cheeks, my neck, my hair. They're everywhere. He's an octopus wrapping himself around me, no longer molding, but conquering. And it's crazy, but the rain stops abruptly, the sun peeking through the clouds. The rays pierce my cold skin, and Mal does the rest of the job, pouring heat that swirls and dances in my stomach. When our lips connect again, they don't meet, they crash. He shoves his tongue into my mouth, growling. Our tongues twist together, roaming, exploring, fighting. He's an animal, acting on a carnal instinct, devouring me like a beast. We kiss and we kiss and we kiss, and boy, does he know how to kiss. He smells amazing. He tastes divine. And when his head drops to suck on my neck, my eyes widen as I remember Kathleen is still there. She watches us through the window, tears rolling down her cheeks as her palm presses against the glass, ghost white from the pressure she puts on it. I can feel the pressure of her touch like my skin is the glass. Mal and I are no longer kissing. We are full-blown making out in the middle of the street, his lips closing around my tongue and sucking it into his mouth. "Christ," he mutters, moving his mouth to the sensitive flesh of my shoulder, dragging it up my chin and back to my lips again, still oblivious to our audience.
"You burn under my fingertips, Rory. How do I give you up?"
Burn, I think. Strange choice of words, seeing how I'm always cold. But I feel it too, the pull, the ache. It is not necessarily sweet or nice or called for. I'm aflame at the stake, a red-headed witch watching his fire consume me. I rip my mouth from his and mumble, "We can't do this here." He kisses my mouth again, then my nose, then my forehead. He can't stop. No part of him is in control.
"Let's check you out of that money-sucking hotel and head back home. I want to spend every waking moment in you until you leave."
"What?"
"With you. Get your mind out of the gutter, lass."
"You put it there," I laugh.
"You say carjacking, I say borrowing. Why are we still here discussing it?"
Dazed, I slip into the passenger seat of his car, fastening my seatbelt. Mal gets behind the wheel, revving the engine. He drank quite a bit of Guinness a few hours ago, yet he looks oddly sober. I look up one last time, catching Kathleen's gaze. Her eyes are puffy and wet. It's not in my nature to be a bitch, but it's not in my nature not to fight back either. Mal doesn't look back and doesn't appear to notice Kathleen as he rolls down the road, taking a U-turn back to Dublin. Our hands touch, and there's a moment I can't explain. It feels like more than just our flesh links us. I tell myself it's nothing, that I'm the only one feeling it. But then I slip my hand back between my thighs, and we both shudder in unison, like someone unplugged us from an electric outlet. "To burn under your fingertips," I think, "is to come alive." During the drive, I realize what Father Doherty was talking about. I'm a gray squirrel, an unwanted pest who steals from the locals. The cunning, street-smart, diseased, rat-like thing. But villains are just misunderstood heroes. I learned that the day I realized my mother's arch-nemesis, Glenn, was the protagonist I wanted to meet the most. I sit back and let Mal reach over, grab my hand and lace his fingers through mine over the gear shift. Life is too short not to kiss the one you want. Midway into Dublin, I remember something. "Mal?"
"Princess,"
he answers naturally, like we're well-versed in conversations with each other. "You said something was ironic, but never got to tell me what it was."
"Did I?"
He feigns innocence. "Tell me."
"Even if it's no longer true."
"Especially so."
"Well, my name, Malachi, means angel. But Kath used to tell me I was the devil when we were teenagers, that I'd be the very thing to kill her one day. She was 80% joking, I'm sure. I was always up to one shenanigan or the other, climbing trees, lighting homemade torches, attempting to ride the cattle."
There's a twitch in his mouth that tells me he's trying to school his face, that he's tasting a calamity that's yet to happen.
"But 20% of it,
I felt she truly believed, which is why I've always kept my distance from her. A subconscious part of me has always been worried I'll hurt her.
I squeeze his bicep. It is ironic that the angel is someone's devil.
The second part of my name, Doherty, means unlucky, yet ma'am claims the luck of the Irish is with me.
So why is this part not ironic anymore, I ask.
Because I don't feel so unlucky right now.
He moves his eyes from the road, his gaze finding mine. My throat closes on a declaration. I like you, Malachi Doherty, more than I should. Definitely more than my half-sister allows me to. I turn toward the window, clearing my throat. Do you like her? Is that why you're afraid of hurting her?
Sure, I like her fine.
You're playing with her feelings.
She enjoys it.
She enjoys having her heart broken? I blink, incredulous. I'm concerned about what it says about him that he's using Kathleen as blood sport. No matter what I feel about my half-sister, she doesn't deserve it. He stares back at the road, rolling his bottom lip with his teeth.
Between being ignored and being toyed with, Kathleen would prefer the latter, which is why she's at my door twice a week. Look, I tried telling her it isn't going to happen. She cried, she broke things. She even slept outside my door one winter night. This is what she wants. A sliver of hope to hold on to. I think Kath is a grand lass, but I don't fear her capabilities over me. Isn't that the essence of love? Find someone worth killing for. Someone with the power to ruin you.
Silence stretches between us. I always thought of love as something sweet, fun, not melancholic, dark, and all-consuming. Then again, I've never imagined I'd fall in love.
You, on the other hand.
He taps the steering wheel.
You can slay me any day of the week.
So you can kill Kathleen, and I can kill you? I ask, watching the landscape zip by. That's a morbid way to look at things. The fields sprawl like bed sheets under the darkening sky. Tomorrow I'll see them in full daylight, and then I'll never see them again. I have nothing to look for here. Ireland turned out to be a sweet, unfulfilled promise.
Life's morbid. Spoiler alert, we all die at the end.
Malachi shrugs. Well, I'm a pacifist, so don't worry about me. I'll never kill you. I turn back to face him. He smiles a sad smile I haven't seen on him before, takes my hand and kisses my knuckles, his eyes still on the road. The energy I felt earlier when our hands touched returns, and I can't put a name to it, but it's electric, tangible. It even has a taste.
You already have.
Mal carries my suitcase to his car, then proceeds to spend the next hour arguing with the hotel's receptionist, trying to get them to let me go without paying for the night I've booked. The receptionist looks to be in her mid-50s, baggy-eyed with no patience to spare. They each ping-pong the merits of their argument. I take Mal's hand and tug, pleading for him to drop it. I'll pay. I don't care about the money. Actually, I do, but I care more about not wasting the few hours I still have in Ireland watching them argue over my bill. Mal shakes me off and continues bickering with the woman. He tells her to climb inside my skin and walk in it, referencing, I shit you not, To Kill a Mockingbird. I want to simultaneously hide under a rock and kiss him silly.
This girl right here came all the way from New Jersey to mourn the father she never met,
he points at me.
Her hostel reservations got cocked up, and she checked in here only to have somewhere to put her suitcase. Sir, I understand, but we have policies in place, she argues.
Mal lets out an exasperated sigh and takes his wallet out of his back pocket. He throws a stack of bills onto the counter.
You win.
I hope this makes you very happy and pays for your boss's Ibiza villa and 3 illegitimate children with his secretary.
The woman looks down at the notes scattered between them. Actually, sir, it's 300 euros per night.
Holy forks.
He sucks in a breath, throwing more notes at her, plus a few gum wrappers, a handful of coins, and what looks like a fortune from a cookie. He turns around and grabs my hand. We gallop out to the chilly street. My heart is pounding in my chest. You didn't have to do that. I'll pay you back.
Like hell you will, darling.
He turns to me, and to my amazement, he is all smiles. In fact, he looks like nothing happened, totally over it. Aren't you mad? I blink.
What about?
Spending all the money you've earned this week for a room we won't be using, for one thing. He waves me off, laughing now.
That was a minute ago. It's time to move on. Don't let the little things in life bother you, yeah?
Crazy as it sounds, I get what he means. Life is too short to get caught up in the small things. We get into his car and drive back to the village. When we pass Kathleen's house on the way to his farm, I can't help but sneak a peek at her window. She's not there. We get to his Tudor-style cottage, which is white with black logs running across it, a dark roof, and a heavy oak door that's thoroughly chipped. It looks small, but in a charming, quaint way, at least in the dark. We fight bushes and overgrown grass that lash at our ankles as we make our way to the door.
"Mam's in Kilkenny, visiting my brother Desmond, so it's just you and me," he says.
"That's cool that you have an older brother." I watch the back of his head as he pushes the old door with his shoulder, applying force. It winds open and we pour into his living room. Wide plank floors, wrought iron lighting, and salvaged wood everywhere tell me I'm no longer in America. Save for the tattered orange-yellow couch and flat TV, this place could pass as a Regency household.
"Six," he says,
dumping his keys into a vase by the door before turning around and pulling me into his arms. I melt in his hands. "You have 6 brothers?" I burrow into his heat, torn between astonished and jealous. He shrugs.
6 siblings. 5 brothers and 1 sister. Catholic family, you see. Dez is the oldest. I've also got 5 nieces and 4 nephews. Don't get me started about the pets."
I clear my throat. "And your dad?"
"Kicked the bucket young. Heart attack at 40. I was a wee boy when he died. Joke's on him because I don't remember him enough to miss him."
"I'm sorry," I say anyway. He takes my hand and leads me to the narrow old kitchen with a yellow, decaying breakfast nook. He pushes another door open, and we spill into his backyard, which I can see is huge, even in the dark. There are a few divided paddocks where they must keep the cattle. I can't imagine Mal as a farmer. Clearly, he can't imagine himself one either, because he prefers to perform on the street for a living. He leads me to a patch of grass and tells me to stall the ball. He disappears into his house and comes back with blankets, a bottle of whiskey, and an orange pack of something called hobnobs. We lie on the grass next to each other, staring at the stars as they fade into the clouds. "Do you believe in God?" I munch on a chocolate-covered cookie. It's so much easier to ask weird questions when darkness engulfs you. I can see a glorious Mal smile cracking in my periphery.
"When it suits me."
"When does it suit you?"
"When I need to have a word with him, or when Ireland needs a prayer during the World Cup games. My turn to ask a question."
I already roll my eyes, psychic that I am.
"Why don't you like your scar?"
"Birthmark," I itch to correct. "How do you know I don't like it?"
"You didn't want to talk about it," he says.
I sigh. There's nothing to like about it. It's ugly. It stands out.
"It's the most beautiful thing about you. It makes you more than a generically beautiful face, he says.
I shake my head. I don't want to think about it. My turn. Do you sometimes feel like we're all just burning alone?
All the time, he croaks. Less so when I'm with you, though. My turn. Have you ever climaxed with a guy?
I choke on crumbs from my cookie, twisting my head to him with a frown. He still stares at the stars, completely serene. What the hell, Mal?
I'm sorry, is that more intimate than asking if I believe in God? Besides, you're never going to see me again, remember? Who will I tell? My arsehole sheep?
He's right. Our little world has an expiration date. No. I mean, I'm not a virgin. I just... Anyway, no. I think I'm too inside my head when I'm intimate with a dude. My turn, I say quickly. I hate that he's smiling. I hate that his smile makes every inch of my flesh tingle. But most of all, I hate that he illuminates all my senses like a drug, and soon I'll have to quit him. Do you really hate money? I ask.
Loathe it, he confirms. I'll never make large sums of it, knowingly anyway.
So Kathleen was right. You can sell your songs and don't? He tilts his head toward me, cupping my cheek. Fire licks at the inside of my belly.
Not needing money makes you rich in another way, Rory. A better way. The less you depend on it, the less it limits you. My turn. Do you think you'll marry a rich, boiled, bald man when you're older?
Boiled, bald? I laugh. He takes a swig from the whiskey, but still stares at me, dead serious.
Yeah. Rich men like taking flying classes. It boils their balls. And then they blame their wives for not being able to conceive when actually their sperm count is in the shitter. I've read about it at the dentist's while I was waiting to get my teeth cleaned.
Thanks for the anecdote. I try to stifle a giggle. No, I've no plans to marry a rich guy. Why?